Okay, so this piece is a very reflective piece in two ways. Number one, when people speak about Chassidus in general and this whole Ishbitz, Katz, Gier, they all come from the same family of Chassidus as being very pre-modern and very psychological. What does that mean? What's the difference between modern views of man and ancient or medieval views of man? So this is very reflective of that. And second of all, the type of relationship that Chassidim, the Chassidish Rebbeim, had with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the type of communication that they felt they enjoyed, even in a post-prophetic era. We feel like we're living far from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, especially before we were back in Eretz Yisrael, in a period of Hester Panim. It was hard to understand Hashem's will outside of the Halacha and Har Sinai and Gilui Shechina. But it's hard to understand Hashem's will about our lives on a day-to-day basis, what decisions Hashem wants us to take. So this is an Ishbitzer about how people make decisions, and it's modern in the following fashion. In the classic world, the world was much more objective and absolute. There's absolute truths, there's objective realities. These are the truths that apply to all men. Now, there could be multiple truths, but they're presented as all absolute truths, and then, of course, you have to find a way when to employ one, when to employ the other. In the modern world, we're much more subjectivist. What's your truth? What's your truth? Or what's my truth in this context? Or what's my truth in this context? What's the right decision? The concept of personal context, and even within a personality, of different stages and phases of life, is much more articulate. It's much less implicit. Obviously, people always felt different from the other people, and they always felt like their phases were different, but they didn't articulate it in the same sense of what's your truth, what's the context, what type of behavior is appropriate in this context. This is a perfect example. He talks about two types of decisions, and there's a lot of this duality in the Ishbitz. You don't have as much duality in medieval Rishonim and medieval thinkers. Here, there are two ways, Svedinim, the balance, if you're willing to balance yourself out. And there's not one truth that can always be implemented. So he talks in this piece, in Parshas Balak, about how we make decisions. Sometimes we make decisions in life, and we feel like we're right. We know exactly the decision. It's clear, black and white, night and day, what action we should take. And at that point, we have to be tenacious. At that point, we have to be persistent. At that point, we have to be stick-to-itiveness. We can't retreat. We can't equivocate. We can't become uncertain, because then we'll miss the mark. Sometimes we have clarity, and when there's clarity, the decision has to be taken with boldness and courage and intensity. And sometimes in life, we're less certain. And when we're uncertain, then we have to dip our feet in the pool and see how things go and try to read the tea leaves and try to understand whether, and this, so far, I haven't discussed anything religious. This is psychology 101. This is how you make decisions in life. There's just the two modalities. Sometimes you're very, very focused because it's clear to you what should be done, and the decision is very, very unmistakable. And sometimes in life it's less clear, and you have to respond to realities and see how realities unfold. And so far I haven't talked about religion. You have to be careful in life to modulate between the two. Because sometimes people are too hard-headed and too obstinate with situations that are more fluid and uncertain. Sometimes people are more, or not passionate and driven enough with situations that should require that type of drive. Now, of course, as an Oved Hashem, then those two modalities are not just experiential, how you feel the world is responding to you. Is the world providing black and white solutions? Is the world providing vague and uncertain opportunities? But what do you think Hashem's will is? Sometimes Hashem's will is clear to you. It's clear what Hashem wants from you, and in those cases you should be more driven. In some cases, HaKadosh Baruch Hu hasn't revealed His will to you, and therefore you have to try to intuit and you have to try to discern that will through the process itself, and the experience and the decision has to be much more fluid and changing and dynamic. So if you were an atheist, you'd still talk about these two modalities, but to you there'd be some external code that would determine whether it's black and white and requires persistence and tenacity, whether it's uncertain and vague and ambivalent and ambiguous and requires interactive decisions. But as a religious person, as an Oved Hashem, then the yardstick is not just what's right or wrong externally, but what you think the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. That's what he says in this. Now let's get to the actual pasuk. The pasuk says, "Ki lo nachash bi Yaakov, velo kesem bi Yisrael." Now we typically interpret nachash and kesem as more or less the same. They both belong to the world of black magic, of sorcery, of trying to predict the future. We know what Nachash is because the Gemara articulates Nachash. Nachash is a person sees a deer crossing his way in the street. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, oh, it's a bad day to start a business venture or a stick breaks. And he's looking for all sorts of omens and portents to determine his behavior rather than determining behavior based on freedom of choice. And a kesem is magic tricks and ways to predict the future. So that's how we typically interpret them. He reinterprets it too. But again, notice the duality in the pasuk. The duality in the pasuk is because Bilam is a poet. So when you're a poet, you repeat things in different metaphors and different terms. But for the Ishbits, it's not just poetry, but they're very, very different modalities. Nachash is when you're driven to something and you should be driven to something. He doesn't articulate here why Nachash becomes that. It's based on a different piece. But for now, let's just leave it. Nachash is something you're driven to. Kesem is where you have to decide your manner and try to respond to an unfolding and uncertain future. And here's the key point. You have to know which state of being you're in, where you are in life. If you're someone that's being exposed directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, then you should have nachash. You should have that stick-to-itiveness and persistence. And if you're not exposed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, you don't know what it is right, what it is yet, you shouldn't be obstinate and hard-headed and wooden-headed. So what Bilam is telling the Jewish people is that they're so exquisite that they know how to calibrate what state they're in. If they're in a state of Yaakov, and Yaakov always refers to a more depressed state of the Jewish people, smaller, struggling. Remember, Yaakov is the name of Yaakov when he's struggling with Esav. Yisrael is the triumphant name. So if you're a Yaakov, if you're in a state of Yaakov, then you shouldn't have nachash. You shouldn't have obstinacy and hard-headedness and tenacity. And if you're in a state of Yisrael, where it's clear to you, you've triumphed and you know Hashem's will, Sarisim, Elkim, Banashim, Vatuchal, then you shouldn't have Kosem. You shouldn't have these clues and hints and omens. You should just be much more strongly focused. And that's what Bilam is telling the Jewish people. They know exactly how to calibrate. If they're in Yaakov, they don't have Nachash. If they're in a state of uncertainty, then they try to read the tea leaves and they have Kosem, they have Kesem. If they're in a state of Yisrael, then they don't have Kesem, they have Nachash. They've got drive. So Nachash and Kesem are these two states. Nachash is drive and tenacity, focus when it's clear. Kesem is interactive, gradual, evolutionary decisions. And Bilam is praising the Jewish people that they know how to time it. They know how to apply the appropriate setting. If they're in a state of Yaakov, then they're not obstinate. Kilo Nachash b'Yaakov. If they're in a state of Yisrael, then they are obstinate. They're less interactive. Philo Kesem b'Yisrael. That's his piece. What's fascinating is, well, how do you know Hashem's will? It's one thing if you live in prophetic era, if you're Yaakov, Yisrael, you're living in Har Moriah, you're living in the times of Yetzias Mitzrayim, then it's easy for Bilam to say, look, when they're in a state of certainty, then they apply the Nachash. When they're in a state of uncertainty, then they apply the Kosem. What about us? So he quotes, for example, the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin says that Rav would check before he would journey whether the ferry boat came on time and came to his stop. If the ferry boat didn't come to his stop or didn't come on time, he wouldn't take the ferry boat because he saw that as a bad omen. He saw that Hashem didn't want that voyage or that journey to be taken. There's one problem with that. That's called lotanachashu. You're not allowed to play with omens. You're not allowed to abdicate freedom of choice based on arbitrary and trivial events. So how did Rav do what he did? So most Rishonim say he basically planned his trip independent, but if there was something that he saw wrong with the ship, then he didn't want to take that ship because if it wasn't on time, then it was malfunctioning. I wouldn't get on a malfunctioning trip, not because it's an omen, but because common sense. If the ship didn't come to his port, then maybe the ship was all sorts of logical reasons, or Rav knew he wanted to take the journey, but just psychologically to give himself some inner chizuk if the boat came on time. It's like he really based his decision. But for the Ishbitz, you can. Because for the Ishbitz, remember, the world of Hasidus, there's much more of a direct line of communication between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and a person, even in the 19th century. And you could read the tea leaves and see omens in your world that indicate whether HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to take one of those ambiguous decisions. There's certain decisions that are absolutely clear as day. And even that is something. Do you ever have that type of decision? You know that you're close enough to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to determine that this decision is black and white and clear and requires tenacity and persistence. And then there are other decisions which are ambiguous, but you can watch for all these omens that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will deliver to you and somehow skirt lo tenachashu. So for example, there are some Rishonim that say you are allowed to use omens, you're just not allowed to use the omens that the idolaters use. It's really in Israel, the Rambam writes, of Avodah Zarah, but you're allowed to use all sorts of omens. So what's fascinating is not that he divides it into two types of decision-making. That's psychology 101. There are two types of decisions you make in life, two ways we proceed. Sometimes we make decisions based on clarity and purpose, and we're focused and honed in, and we're laser-focused. And sometimes we have to be evolutionary. And the inability to distinguish between those two can lead to a lot of mistakes in life. So knowing yourself and knowing your context, and this is why modern psychology has unleashed self-awareness. We know, where am I right now? What type of decisions? What stage of life am I in right now? Should I be more precautionary? Should I be more bold? Should I be more focused? Should I be more attuned to the changes? That makes sense, even for a non-religious person. And in theory, if you're able to determine which state you're in based on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's communication with you. Let's say you're standing in Har Sinai and Hashem says, this is a clear decision. Okay, have tenacity. Hashem says, I'm not going to tell you yet whether this is the right decision. I'll give you signs as it unfolds. Then you should be a little bit more interactive and a little bit more responsive and receptive to what's unfolding. But he suggests that that's something you could continue to do, even in a way that in a period in which you don't have nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's where it becomes very provocative, that you can live that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even in the 19th century, where you have such communication that you know which decision Hashem wants me to take. So there's a lot of layers to this Ishbitz, modern psychological awareness, context-specific two modalities, knowing yourself, and ultimately a very bold statement about the ability to clock into HaKadosh Baruch Hu's knowledge, even in a modern era. Okay?